feedback I got last week was I prefer the old style than just giving out what I did last week, giving out a list of all the shaylas I got that week and having people choose. So we'll go back to the old style. I got the following shayla on Sunday, and I'm going to mention three different questions that are all pretty much related to each other, and we're going to deal with all of them together. This past Shabbos, one of the members of our shul, dear friends of ours, made a kiddush for the birth of their daughter, and they made a kiddush by a very big kiddush, a very beautiful kiddush, and they put up a tent in their backyard, and they had a caterer come, and they set up this whole beautiful kiddush. Our shul doesn't really have a ton of space, so they needed a more spacious area. Our shul also doesn't have any drinking, so I don't know if that was part of the kavanah, but they put up a very big, beautiful tent. On Sunday, and the kiddush was beautiful, it was fantastic, the weather was beautiful, as you just mentioned, this past Shabbos, it worked out very nicely. On Sunday, they got an email from the caterer. The caterer is a firm person, and the email had several attachments, and it said, here, in case you're interested, some pictures from your kiddush. And apparently, one of the waitresses who was at the kiddush, was not a Jew, decided that it was such a beautiful setup, and she figured she'll take some pictures. She didn't take pictures of the people. She took pictures of the cakes and the setup and the chalent and, you know, everything that was there and how beautifully it was set up in advance. And they wanted to know, can they use those pictures? Can they put them in an album, you know, in the daughter's baby album? Or what do you really do with pictures nowadays? People don't make albums. You post them on Facebook. So can she put them on Facebook? Is that permissible? So that's question number one. Question number two, similar question, a little bit different, and we'll see why the details, you know, what the differences might be. Another dear friend from my shul happens to be very interested in politics. So he's a young fellow, and he wants to be more politically involved. He went a couple of weeks ago. They had what they call the Republican Jewish Coalition, I believe it's called. They had a Shabbaton, for lack of a better word, in Las Vegas. Now, Republican Jewish Coalition doesn't necessarily mean Republican Orthodox Jewish Coalition. In fact, it almost never really had a significant Orthodox presence, but now they're getting a little bit more of an Orthodox presence. Now, what happens at the Republican Jewish Coalition? So I assume, I don't know for sure, but I assume you hear a lot of speeches of people who are very important, being mechazik, a certain political point of view, and they have important politicians that come, and important people, important donors who happen to be Jewish that are there. And the politicians want to be there. If you're a Republican politician, you want to be at the event or at least make an appearance at the Republican Jewish Coalition. So, for example, former President Bush made an appearance and spoke, and Governor Jeb Bush spoke. And I don't know. I don't know the whole list. He didn't send me the whole...
He's like the only Republican Jew in Congress.
Right, well, okay, but so maybe. But I don't know what the whole lineup was. But as part of the deal, it goes through Shabbos, and all the speeches are on Shabbos. They had kosher food, and they even had a fellow I know from Lawrence, Phil Rosen, made kiddush for the whole olam, and they put a microphone in front of his face. He said no. So they made a big announcement. Everyone has to be quiet because the person who's making kiddush is Orthodox, and he won't speak into a microphone. So everyone has to be quiet. So he made kiddush like, but all the speeches were in a microphone. It's just they were given by goyim, and they were introduced by Jews, meaning the Bushes are not Jews, they're non-Jews. So you want to know, A, can he attend these speeches that are being given on Shabbos when it's being given into a microphone? B, when the kunz is not just to hear the former president speak, it's to take a picture with him. And they designate like an hour where they have a photographer who's there on staff, and you just go up right next to the president, you smile, you get a picture with him, and then you could have that, you know, in your office, that you have a picture with the president. It's something that people like to do. It makes you feel very important when you have a picture with the president. My uncle, I go to his house in his basement, he has a picture with like every single president from like Nixon and on. You know, that's pretty impressive that he met every single president. So the question was, can you do that on Shabbos. Meaning the photo op is going to be on Shabbos. There's going to be a guy taking the picture. All he had to do is smile, and then have that picture. Just get in line and smile and have that picture with him, you know, to have forever. I happen to have been speaking to Rabbi Eli Storch, who is the assistant Menahel in DRS, this afternoon, and he asked me, "Nu, what are you talking about in Landers tonight?" So I mentioned these topics, and he said, "Let me tell you a story." He said, "When I was 11 years old, 1982, now you know how old he is. He said it was 1982. I was about 11 years old, and I was walking in Florida. I guess he was there on vacation or something, walking down Collins Avenue, I guess, and right in front of the Fountain Blue Hotel, someone comes over to him and says, "Hey, kid, you want to be on national television?" So what 11-year-old kid is going to say no? Do you want to be on national? So it happened to have been Shabbos. So he said, "Sure." So they said, okay, they gathered a bunch of 11-year-olds, a bunch of children together, and they said, soon Bob Cousy is going to come out. For those of you who don't know who Bob Cousy is, Google it. I'm not telling you. So, but they said Bob Cousy is going to come out, and he's going to dribble a basketball, and you should make an attempt to make it look like you're attempting to steal the ball from Bob Cousy. But don't steal the ball from Bob Cousy. Make him look good. Just let him dribble around and throw his legs in around his back. So Bob Cousy came out, and Rabbi Storch said, "I stole the ball from Bob Cousy." You can't tell me not to steal the ball from Bob Cousy. So I think he found it on YouTube. Now everything's on YouTube. So they found this program that had with Bob Cousy that was filmed on Shabbos. So can he tweet that video out? It's really cool that he has a video of himself stealing. How far away do you have to stay from a video that was made on Shabbos involving a Jew, even though it wasn't a Jew who was filming? Although in South Florida, there's like 90% chance that everyone's Jewish in South Florida. We discussed that in the Pesach Shir with the waiter. That same brother-in-law who discovered the Jewish waiter, just an unbelievable. I was so inspired by this story, even though I told it to my wife and she was thoroughly uninspired. But I was very inspired by it. My sister sent me a link to a story from the Florida Sun Sentinel, which I guess is a paper in South Florida, and they did a story on Shavuos, about Shavuos and about how the different denominations celebrate Shavuos. You know, the conservatives speak about Jewish culture and social issues and the Reform, I don't know what the Reform, whatever they do. And the Orthodox have some people that stay up all night and they observe 2 days of it, not just 1 day, and went through what the Orthodox do. And to get the Orthodox perspective, the secular Jewish reporter went to Boker Hatan Synagogue on a typical weekday morning, and he figured he'd interview some people. So he interviewed Rabbi Goldberg, who's the rabbi of the shul, and an old classmate of mine from Rav Shachter Shir, and he interviewed my brother-in-law. My brother-in-law happened to have been davening there that day. My brother-in-law he works in nursing homes, a very, very fine, special Jew, and he interviewed my brother-in-law. So my brother-in-law's quoted in the article as saying, "Shavuos is my favorite holiday because you learn Torah all night, and it's the most inspiring thing to be able to learn Torah. When something clicks in Torah in your mind, it's the best feeling in the whole world, and people come together, and it's to learn together." And it's like a beautiful quote, the most amazing quote. So my sister told me that what's not in the paper was what happened right after that quote. Right after he spoke, he told that to the reporter. The reporter said, "So tell me, what's so great about Torah? You tell me it's so great that it's this great feeling. What's so good about it?" So now there's a test. How do you answer that question? What's so great about Torah? I failed miserably. What's so great about Torah? So I asked this to my Talmidim and DRS. They all had different answers. It was interesting to hear what they had to say also. What's so great about Torah? So my brother-in-law said, "What's so great about Torah? Come, let me show you." And he sat down with him and learnt with him for a half hour. That's pretty good, no? That's how you answer the question. And that's nothing to do with our shilas, though. So the shila that we're dealing with, when these photographs or videos are taken on Shabbos, to what extent are you allowed to relate to them, to use them, to benefit from them, to the extent that it's called benefit at all? So what's the issue? What is the what area of halacha? Where do I open up? And we start every shir. Where do I open up the Shulchan Aruch to find the answer to this question? What volume of Shulchan Aruch do I take out? What area of halacha am I looking for?
Or Chaim, Simon, I think Shimzai.
So new, so explain. What are you...
We're talking about being
Neneh from halacha that was done by a guy, right? Being Neneh from halacha that was done on Shabbos. So Maisa Shabbos, Shimzai, but also just Amir Lakum in general and being Neneh from the melacha done for you. Yeah.
There also be like a Marisayan issue.
Oh, there also might be a Marisayan issue. What's the Marisayan issue?
If you're putting a photo of what you did on Shabbos, people will.
Oh, and good, and it may be different for each of the cases. Meaning, when you put on Facebook, this was our Shabbos Kiddush for our daughter, so that was obviously a Shabbos event. Whereas stealing the ball from Bob Cousy, you know, you could do that during the week also. May not have been, unless it was like Saturday afternoon, Wide World of Sports, or whatever the program was. Maybe it's more obvious that it's Shabbos. Being with the president, that could happen any day of the week. So it may be a Marisayan issue depending on what the specifics of the case are. Yeah.
What about the fact that the case of the person of someone photographed on the street on Shabbos, the person did not tell the person does not have any.
Those are some details within the Amir La'akum side of things. So we'll go through that. And the third thing is just a general Zilzal Shabbos, meaning to what extent do we have to be careful to just stay away from things that just don't maybe pay the proper respect to Kedushas HaShabbos. That it's not about Marisai. No one's going to think you did anything wrong or think that they can do anything. Just Zilzal Shabbos. That you can use photographs that were taken on Shabbos that maybe one should stay away. So let's go through issue by issue. Amir La'akum. So the issue that you're talking about when it comes to Amir La'akum. Just parenthetically, I just want to point out, I got a shaila this week that, actually last Friday afternoon, very fascinating shaila. And as soon as I got the shaila, I'm like, I'm going to use that at the, ask the rabbi shir, and not the ask, whatever, what do we call it? From the rabbi's desk shir. So I said immediately, and then as I was looking back at the email to copy and paste it into my notes, I saw the email said, do not use this at the, from the rabbi's desk shir. It's too sensitive, whatever. Do not use this. So if anyone emails me a shaila, put that at the beginning, because I just didn't read the PS the first time. Like, I was really planning on using it. So if there's a shaila that you don't want me to use, I mean, some of them I'll figure out that you don't want me to use. But if there's a shaila that that you don't want me to use that I won't figure out, so you may want to put that at the beginning of the email. Okay, but Amir La'akum. So when it comes to Amir La'akum, so this isn't Amir La'akum. You didn't ask the person to take the picture for you.
Is it Remez B'derech Tzibur?
You weren't Merami's anything.
Like smiling for the few of you smile.
For by the president. By the president. Remez B'derech, it's not B'derech Tzivoy. It would be Shalom B'derech Tzivoy at the most, if it's even called Remiza, to take the picture, because the photographer is telling you what to do. You're not telling them what to do. But let's just define some of the terms over here. Amir La'akum is an Isser Midrabanan on Shabbos. Why is it Asa? The Rambam writes in the sixth parak of Hilchos Shabbos that if you're allowed to tell a guy to do work for you on Shabbos, it'll come to a terrible zilzal of Shabbos. Everything would end up getting done on Shabbos. All Shabbos would become like a weekday. You just have a guy be an extension of you doing everything. Rashi writes in Avodah Zarah Daf Tezvav that telling a guy to do a melacha for you is part of the Isser of Mitzvah Dabar Davar, that you're not supposed to speak non-Shabbistic things, and what could be less Shabbistic than saying, do this malacha, so it's a violation of Mitzvah Chavetzcha. Speaking about business-related things, or any malacha would be included. Rashi in Shabbos Kuf Chav Aleph says a little bit different, right? A lot different. And also in Kuf Nun Gimel Masech Shabbos, that Rashi says, Shluch Shaladim Kamoso. That when you ask a guy to do malacha, he becomes your shliach. Shluch shalom kamoso, so it's ki'ilu you're doing the malacha. Aye, there's no shlichus by a guy, but yesh shlichus la'akum l'chumra. Shluch Aruch Rav explains that there is shlichus for a guy l'chumra. There's no shlichus for a guy to affect a mitzvah for you, but there is shlichus l'chumra. Some mitzvahs you don't even need shlichus, right? Some mitzvahs you can have a guy do for you. You can have a guy build a maka al gagecha, and that's not a problem, because you don't need shlichus. You just need to have a fence so you can have a safe roof. That you could have a guy do. But anything you need shlichus for, generally you can't send a guy. But l'chumra, we say there's shlichus. So there are two isurim within Amir La'akum, one of which has no connection to this, and the other one that might have a connection. The one that has no connection is that the Shulchan Aruch writes in Simchat Zayin that you're not allowed to tell a guy, here's some meat, cook it for yourself, even for himself. You're not allowed to tell a guy to do a malacha. The Ramah says that the Ramah disagrees. The Ramah says you could tell him to do it for himself, as long as you don't provide him with the wherewithal to do the malacha. But you cannot You wouldn't be allowed to tell a guy, here's my lawnmower, mow your own lawn, but you can offer him, you can tell him to mow his lawn on Shabbos without offering him your lawnmower. So there is a just general iser to tell a guy to do a malacha. The machlokas mechaber amah is only about to what extent how far the iser goes when he's doing it for himself. But if he's doing it for you, there's definitely an iser to tell him to do a malacha. That one, that you don't seem to be doing over here. You're not telling him to do anything. This waitress on her own decided to snap pictures of the kiddush that was set up. The photographer was hired by whoever to take these pictures, and they're doing it on their own. You're not telling anybody to do anything. Yeah?
Understandable is for the person who made the kiddush, what about the caterer himself?
So that was part of the issue over here. I'm not certain. The person was saying, the waitress was so impressed with her work, how she set up the kiddush, she wanted to take pictures of it. I don't know that that's what happened. It could be that she was taking pictures to impress her boss. And that's how the caterer got it, that she wanted to say, you can use this in advertising. How you ever have pictures to show what you do for a Shabbos kiddush? If someone wasn't actually at the kiddush, they don't know what kind of job you do. So it could be that they were doing it for a Jew. Not for this Jew, but they were doing it for the caterer, who is a Jew. But again, the caterer didn't tell them. I trust that the caterer didn't tell them to take the
picture. Also, for himself, because they're doing it this way, they keep the job and get a higher pay.
Right, right. So they're doing it for a Jew and for themselves, maybe. The caterer didn't tell them. I don't think the caterer told them to do it. So that first element of Amir Lakum, I don't think you have. What's the second element of Amir Lakum? The second element, Shulchan Aruch writes in Reisha and Vav, that you're not allowed to get hanah from malacha done by a guy, even if the malacha wasn't done for you specifically. And that would motivate, that would take away any motivation anyone might have to want to do Amir al-Aklam, because even after it's done, you're not allowed to get any anah from it. You're not allowed to get any anah from the malacha done by a guy. But that only applies if it's direct benefit, meaning turn on the light so I can have light. You know, cook this for me so I can eat this. But not to things that are indirect benefit. Like something's annoying you, so get it out of here. Like there's too much light, so get rid of the light. That would be considered something that would be indirect benefit. That you're allowed to get hana'ah because it's not called that you're getting hana'ah. Now, within the first element of Amir al-Akum, there's a whole sugya of hinting. Meaning to get around that first element of telling someone, the iser to tell a guy to do something for you, you can get around it with certain types of hinting. The hinting has to be done shelo b'derech tzivui, in a non-command type of way. What does it mean it's done in a non-command type of way? It means that you don't ask them to do anything, nor do you mention the malacha. That's the way to do it. So if you say, it's so dark in my room, I wish someone would turn on the light for me, that's no good, because you're mentioning the malacha of turning on the light. You're mentioning the specific action. You could say, it's so dark in my room I can't see. That would be remiza shelo b'derech tzivui. But again, most situations, you're still going to have the second problem of mir la'akum. You now have gotten around the first problem of telling the guy to do something, but now you're not allowed to get anah from the light anyway, because he did it for you. He turned on the light for you. If he does it for himself, so then, then you're allowed to get hanah from it. Then you get around the second problem of Amir la'akum. Now, what if he's doing, if he's doing a malacha for a Jew, but it's for another Jew? It's not for you. So that the post can point out, there's a difference between malacha d'oraisa versus malacha d'rabbanan. Malacha d'oraisa is asr for any Jew to benefit from. But a malacha d'rabbanan is only asr for the one that it's being done for. So, and in either case, it would be asr b'kadesh yasu, and then after that, after kadesh yasu, after Shabbos, the amount of time it would take to do it after Shabbos, it would be mutter. In this case, I think we're 100% clear of any amir la'akum for this, let's say the kiddush case, for the guy to benefit from the malacha. It was not a malacha done for him. It was probably done for the caterer, and the caterer was just sharing it with him. There was no tzivoy. Kadesh Yasu is a little tricky to figure out, something that could not be done after Shabbos because everything was ready, dismantled, and taken apart after Shabbos. That's a little bit trickier, but I think we're pretty clear of Amir La'akum.
It's only Nisa Durabanan to take pictures?
Or? And assuming that taking a digital picture is Nisa Durabanan. Let's assume that that's Nisa Durabanan. because for several reasons, it's on the screen and it's goes on and off very easily. It's not something that leaves any permanent mark. Although one could argue with that, one could certainly argue with that. So I think even if it were Nisr Daraisa, I think we're clear of Amir La'akum, because you're not even sure that it was done for a Jew in the first place, and even if it was done for a Jew, it was done for the guy also. The guy was doing it for herself also. So I think the Amir La'akum issue is not such a major issue. What about the guy taking a picture with the president? So he's not. So the guy said, well, it's being done for, it's a picture of two people, of me and the president, so it's being done for a guy and a Jew. The president doesn't need a picture with you. The president is, I don't think this is being done. I thought that was Mamash Malacha, that's being done specifically for your benefit. And it's hard to, maybe because they also have Shabbos, but again, it's harder when you're dealing with an opportunity that can't be replicated after Shabbos. The president's not sticking around to take more pictures with you after Shabbos. So I thought that may be more of an issue. What about listening to the microphone? Listening to the guy, to the president talking the microphone on Shabbos? Or listening to other people, to Jews who are introducing the president talking the microphone? So did you see the story today? There was a story in one of the newspapers, Washington Post or something, that there's a speaker for a graduating class in Binghamton, was it? I don't remember. One of the universities, I think Binghamton, where the speaker is the graduate who is supposed to speak to represent the class is an Orthodox Jew. And the story starts by saying that his girlfriend told him, you're not going to believe it, graduation is May 16th. May 16th is a Shabbos. So he said, great, what am I going to do now? So, and the speech is going to be in a microphone. There are thousands of people that come to the graduation. You would have to speak into a microphone. So the story says that he asked his high school principal from SAR. Okay. So he asked his high school principal from SAR what to do. And the principal said to him, as long as no lights go up and down and the microphone's already on, there's no issue to talk into a microphone on Shabbos. And then they went to speak to the technical people who are setting up the graduation to try to figure out if they can make sure the soundboard is off where lights go up and down as you're speaking. And they said they can't do that. There's no way they can make that happen. They said, we have a better aid, so why don't we just video the speech 2 weeks in advance? Not exactly 2 weeks, but let's say 13 days or 15 days in advance, right? Not on a Shabbos. Why don't we video the speech a couple of weeks in advance? And that way, you'll sit at the graduation and you'll speak on the video, and you can just sit there watching yourself speak like everybody else is watching the speech. Which, by the way, is a much better eitzah. That's
wouldn't it be at least for
the
Jewish people, it would be more happy, the Jew, for the lights and microphones and malacha shein, is a secret of what Michael.
Okay.
I assume the person doesn't care.
That the speaker doesn't care whether he's making the lights go up and down.
Yeah.
Okay, it's worthy of discussion. Certainly a point that's worthy of discussion.
I could argue that you have that point by saying, depending on how, on the level of the light that you want.
They'll
to
control his voice based
right.
on that, and they'll use his. Yeah. So where do you get that from, that using a microphone, if there are no lights turning up and down, is totally heter gomer, if it's been turned on? So I found where he got it from. The Tzomet Institute has an article where they hold very strongly. They quote all the poskim. They quote that Moshe said not that way, and Rosh Hashanah Zalman said not that way, and Tzitz Eliezer said not that way. But then they say, but I think that Tzomet is a very reliable institute, and Rav Rosen is a very, very big Talmud Chacham. But he takes on all of the Gedolei HaPoskim, who all thought that it's a problem to speak into an open mic. Some of the earlier poskim that thought that it was a problem for incorrect reasons, meaning reasons that are just the metzius is not true, where it's making some sort of fire or things like that, that are just simply not true with a modern microphone. But then he gets into the discussion of what the real issue is with which is Hashma's call. Yeah, that the using a microphone on Shabbos, is the Gemara on Shabbos of Yuches says that you're not allowed to put grain into a mill before Shabbos and have the mill running on Shabbos, because it makes a very loud noise. And unless you put it in before Shabbos and it's done grinding before Shabbos starts. So the Gemara explains that because it creates a lot of noise, and the creation of noise is the problem. That's Av Shemilsa, Rashi writes, the Lashon of Av Shemilsa. That's the Lashon that's quoted in the Torah in Simration and Beis, that it creates a lot of noise. So how do you understand that halacha, that you're creating noise, and because you're creating noise, that it's necessarily a problem? So Rashi writes that it's a violation of Uvdu Dechal, that it's something that's very not Shabbistic, to have, it's a zilusa de Shabbos, to have all of this noise is a terrible zilusa de Shabbos. In Darkei Moshe, in the bottom of the tour, he quotes that it's zilusa de Shabbos, and then he says, it's also a different concern, that people who hear it are going to think that you're doing malacha on Shabbos. So if you have, let's say, and this example is given in Shulchan Aruch, you have, let's say, a grandfather clock, that at 12, it goes around the hour, you know, makes a noise. No one's going to think you did malacha on Shabbos, but it's making noise. I mean, no one in their right mind, they know that that's the way it works, that it's a noise that it makes naturally. No one's going to think you did malacha on Shabbos. So if you hold the reason is Mishum Zilusa de Shabbos, Zilzel Shabbos, or Av Shemilsa, so maybe that would be Aser. But if you hold it's an Iser of Maris Ayin, then it's going to be Mutter. So Rav Rosen from Tzomet says, obviously no one's going to think you did any malacha when you're talking into a microphone on Shabbos. I don't know about that. Well, how do you normally talk into a microphone? You flip the switch to turn it on, and then you talk. So turning it on is the malacha. You're not allowed to do that, for sure. You're not allowed to do that's several problems with turning on a microphone. First of all, the light almost always turns on, and second of all, it's probably tikkun mana. It's probably makom patish. There are a lot of problems with turning on it. You can't turn on a microphone. People are going to think that it was left on from before Shabbos and you're just using a microphone that was left on from before Shabbos. I would think using a microphone on Shabbos is certainly a problem of that people would think that you're doing malacha, plus an issue of uvdu d'chol. So they argue, nothing is uvdu d'chol once it becomes popular enough. Once every shul is outfitted with a tzomet microphone, then microphone's not uvdu d'chol anymore. And until that point, which it doesn't seem to be, I mean, there was an article recently also about how it's gaining steam. It's not just the Hamptons anymore. It's like 8 or 9 synagogues across America or something like that, Orthodox synagogues that have it. That's not so much steam. There are 8 or 9 synagogues on every block in Borough Park. You know, it's not like 8 or 9 synagogues doesn't necessarily represent a significant amount. So I would think that most of the poskim would assume that talking into a microphone on Shabbos, like Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva Norachaim Chel Gimel Siman Nun Hey and Chel Dalet Siman Pei Dalet, that it's a problem and you're not allowed to do it. And like Tzitz Eliezer writes as well, that it's a problem, and it's all based on the Av Shemilsa. So talking into a microphone is not permissible on Shabbos, but you're not talking into a microphone. The president is talking into a microphone, and he's not a Jew. Now, is he doing that malacha for you? So first of all, malacha, it's not a malacha. It's something. It's some issur d'rabbanan that, you know, that a guy is doing. Is he doing it for you? I think there's an argument to be made that he's not doing it for you, that he's doing it for himself.
But he's speaking at the Jewish coalition. Yeah. He's speaking for the Jewish people.
I think he's speaking at a hotel. He's not speaking in a stadium. He's speaking in a hotel ballroom. Hotel ballroom, I can project. I don't have the most powerful voice in the world, but I've spoken in like ballrooms. I could project in a hotel ballroom if everyone's quiet. Certainly, if I was the president, you know, people are quiet for the president. You know, for me, it would be harder. But if you're the president, you could project in a hotel ballroom. It's just it will take a lot out of you. It'll take a lot out of your voice to do so. So the microphone's there to help him. It's there to make it easier for him. Especially if you sit close enough, where you could easily have heard him without the microphone, and the microphone is really there to help him. So I thought maybe listening to the speeches. Now, I'm very hesitant in general about spending Shabbos in a very decidedly non-Shabbos environment. And to do it stam for nothing, I don't think is a good idea. You know, just stam to, because if, you know, there are two types of people that go to these things, as far as I can tell. I don't know, I've never been to one, but from what I can tell, there are two types of people that go. One type of person that goes is someone who's very, very politically involved and has relationships with senators and gets things done and is involved in AIPAC and NORPAC and all that, you know, is very, very politically involved and makes things happen for the Jewish people. Then the other type of person is a hacker, someone who wants to go because it's really great hack, you know? Yeah, I just spent Shabbos afternoon. I was with President Bush. It was fantastic, but has no real, you know, political affiliations or connection or anything. Just, you know, I got invited. How am I not going to go? Of course I'm going to go. So I think if you're the latter, you know, type of person, that you just shouldn't be in such an environment for Shabbos. For the former, there's a good argument to be made that we need people like that. And, I mean, certainly we need people like that. There's no argument to be made. There's a good argument to be made that it's that if you avoid Chilul Shabbos, you know, in every which way, that being in that kind of environment is worth it for people like that, to be able to make the connections. They, what's my source to suggest that we can make some compromises like that just because of political connections? The Gemara tells us in a couple of places, in Sota Daf Mem Tes, last Daf Masech Sota, Misapra Kumi Arezu Midarkei Amori. It's a brisa. The brisa says, Rashi explains to me, someone who could be Megadol Baloris, if they grow their hair in the Baloris kind of way. Machlokas Rishonim, what exactly Megadol Baloris are. Either, it's definitely involved shaving the sides, shaving off the payas, and it either involves growing the front of the head or growing like a long something in the back of the head. It was a hairstyle for Avodah Zarah. So I shouldn't say it definitely involves shaving the sides. Not necessarily shaving entirely the sides, but certainly the contrast between the very close-cut sides and the long, you know, the long front or the long back of the hair is an Avodah Zarah type of haircut. It's Midarkei Amori. Avtulus ben Reuven hitiru l'sakrakomi. The Gemara says, Avtulus ben Reuven, they allowed him to do this. A Jew, they let him do it. Shu karav l'malchus. Because he's karav l'malchus, so he had to have access. He had to be able to look like them in order to be able to get into the king's court. Shal beis Rabban Gamliel, hitiru len chachmas yivanis. Chachmas yivanis, the Gemara just got through saying, was Asir. But shal beis Rabban Gamliel was allowed to study chachmas yivanis. Mepnei shu karav l'malchus, because they're karav l'malchus. Meaning, apparently, it's important to have people who are karav l'malchus, so much so that things that we would normally not allow, we'd make exceptions for such people to be karav l'malchus. Now, there's obviously differences between the American government and probably many of these malchuyos in the times of the Tanaim and the Amoraim, granted that may be the case, but there's also a big difference between listening to a non-Jew speak on a microphone at a Jewish event where you're having Shabbos meals and everything versus growing an Avodah Zarah style haircut and learning Chachmas Yivanis, meaning that this is much less of a violation of anything. So I think just as an ideal, as a precedent, I think that Gemara gives you an idea that there are certain things that we allow. So at the end of the day, I thought that in most of these cases we do not have. Taking a picture with the president, I thought, is a violation. It may very well be a violation of Amir al-Akum. The guy is doing it for you, may never ask them to do it, but it's a malacha that they're clearly doing for you, and one should not benefit from such a malacha that they're clearly doing for you. You don't want to be there to have a guy to set it up so that a guy is doing a malacha specifically for you. The case of the Kiddush, where I didn't think that's Amir al-Akum at all. In terms of Maris Ha'ayin, the case of the Kiddush is an interesting one. The case of the picture with the president is probably not much of a Maris Ha'ayin issue if you have the picture already to display the picture. But to post a picture on Facebook of a Kiddush that you made on Shabbos is Maris Ha'ayin. Now it's important to realize, whenever we talk about Maris Ha'ayin, there are two separate Yisroim we should be talking about. There's something called Maris Ha'ayin, and there's something called Chashad. Rav Moshe Netshuva distinguishes between the two. The Maris Ha'ayin means, well, Chashad. Chashad means someone's going to look at you and say, what a terrible Rasha that person is. Look at the Avera that person's doing. Even though you're not really doing anything wrong. But they're going to think that you're doing something terribly wrong and they're going to think the worst of you. Maris Ha'ayin means someone's going to see what you're doing and they're going to say, I didn't know that's mutter. Fantastic. I'm going to do the same thing. You run the risk of both over here. What are you going to do? You're going to post a picture that was taken on Shabbos. So some people are going to say, can't believe he asked the guy to take pictures on Shabbos. They violated Amir al-Akum and that they asked the waitress to take pictures on Shabbos and that they had the caterer take pictures on Shabbos. So it'll be choshed you. The other half of the people are going to say, what a great idea that is. We made a bar mitzvah on Shabbos and we didn't get any pictures because it was bar mitzvah, it was made on Shabbos. We didn't have a weekday thing, we only had a Shabbos thing. We should take pictures on Shabbos. I get asked that shaila. I've been asked that shaila a few times. People making a Shabbos simcha. Someone said a bris, a Shabbos bris, I just had recently. Someone made a Shabbos bris. They wanted to know, the housekeeper, the baby nurse is going to be here anyway. Can we have her take some pictures of the Shabbos bris? People think this way. Absolutely not. No, you cannot ever take pictures of the Shabbos. But that's what people are going to see. They're going to see that. They're going to say, oh, we can take pictures. That's a great idea. I can't believe I never thought of that. So you can have both violations in terms of Marasayim on that issue. Now, Zilzul Shabbos, I thought, is off the charts for the Kiddush thing. To post it on Facebook that you have pictures of, I thought that's a terrible Zilzul Shabbos to have. I would think that the Kedrin Pronos website is also a terrible Zilzul Shabbos, and potentially Amir Lakamish was also, because the waitress probably did it for him. Yeah.
How do you define Zilzul Shabbos?
It's hard. It's hard to define Zilzul Shabbos. But I would say that, there's certain things that that you have to be in touch with the general culture and see where people are weak. And in those certain areas, even though in general it's not good to be a machmir, in certain areas where you see that people, where there's people on Misrasha a little bit, that there's a little weakening of certain things, it's kedai to be a little extra machmir in those areas. I mentioned a couple of months ago, I think, when we were discussing chosh and mishpat issues. When you see that there's a Jew on the cover of the paper every day that's stealing and embezzling and whatever, we should be extra machmir in how we deal with other people's money, even beyond the letter of the law. There are certain things that are kedai. But in terms of being a mensch, someone said to me that Rabbi Friend once said in one of his drushes that there used to be an airline called Tower Air that used to fly to Israel. They were what? Oh yeah, did he say this maysa with the? They got there like an hour and a half late, and the they were notorious. So like half the people on the plane were like were getting up and taking things, like before the fasten seatbelt sign went off. People were just get me out of here, and they were pushing and reaching for their bags and everything. And some of the people were still sitting. And it was December time, so the flight attendant got on and said, for all those who are standing and getting your bags, happy Hanukkah. And for all those who are sitting, season's greetings. Meaning that they understood who was who. So maybe we should try a little extra harder in the area of Kiddush Hashem, in the area of being a mensch in public, in the area. Rav Mordechai Kamenetsky said that he's makpid, he doesn't honk his horn. Unless it's dangerous. He doesn't honk his horn, just like, no, move it. Kind of get off your cell phone already, the light turned green. He tries not to honk his horn, because it just be extra menschlich. He said that once he was in the parking lot in Gourmet Glot, and he honked his horn, and he realized, I forgot that my minhag is I don't honk my horn. So he immediately recovered, and when the person turned around, he waved, like, hi, how you doing? Even the person's like, do I know you? pretending to at least to avoid that chilul Hashem. So we should be extra machmir that. Where am I coming with this? I think in the day and age of the Shabbos app and the kosher switch and the whatever, and all these attempts at that people sometimes are very excited about what could be the next Zilzul Shabbos, I think it's kedai to be sensitive to Zilzul Shabbos, and certainly to advertise photographs that were taken on Shabbos, I think is a little bit much.
How about the Bob Cousy video?
So the Bob Cousy video, I don't know. That's probably fine. I don't know what he's an 11-year-old kid who was. I don't know. I don't think there's any. There's no Amir La'akum there at all. It's not clear that it was done on Shabbos. They clearly weren't doing it for him. I don't know. I don't even think it's a Maris Ha'ayin. They don't even know that it was Shabbos. It's just a video. Maybe if it said Saturday afternoon. But even then, a lot of these segments are taped and no one actually thinks it was Saturday afternoon. So I don't think it was...
It kind of opened up a can of worms.
It actually only played on Sunday. It actually only played on Sunday. So it was a program that, if I remember correctly, of a sort, only played on Sunday. They videoed it on Shabbos. So I don't know, maybe they cut out the part of him actually stealing the ball from Bob Cousy. but if they play, people don't make the connections, I would think.
Because otherwise, any video that was taken on Shabbos and has a Jew in it, would be us there.
Right, that would be a little much. Yeah, I guess that would be a little much. Okay, well, we'll stop there. There are more Shilas, but we'll stop there.
My home down payment would be $74,000. But with my VA home loan, my down payment is zero. My service was then. My benefits are now. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov. Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.